Today I'm joined by Jonathan Elinoff, an activist with We Are Change Colorado and TruthAlliance.net. Jonathan, thank you for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. Could you start by telling my listeners a little bit about yourself and your background, and also the groups that you're affiliated with?
I'm with WeAreChangeColorado.org, and I'm also with TruthAlliance.net. And those two websites are basically, We Are Change Colorado is a national, international organization actually now. It's started by Luke Gradowski and has chapters all over the world, and the goal is to confront politicians about what is apparent to be, some will call it conspiracy theory, but a common agenda among some of the elite, big industrialists and energy and oil executives and the corporatists of the world, who have a common agenda of basically exploiting political and foreign relations and policy for their own benefit, generally to achieve their own profit or their dominance. It almost always benefits them, and that they use the left and the right in the United States for their agendas. That doesn't necessarily mean that they control domestic policy. It just means that they share in where they would prefer and where they promote the president and the administration and even Congress now, and it gets pretty deep, where they want them to go when it comes to national or international business and wars and foreign policy. So essentially, the people don't have control anymore. But these people do. So We Are Change is about confronting this problem, addressing it directly, and attempting to take back that power and expose this conspiracy, basically.
So are you a founding member of We Are Change Colorado?
Yes.
And how did you, what inspired you to become part of the We Are Change organization?
Well, I've been following this this kind of information for a while. You know, you can look at the Kennedy assassination and you can see a cover-up at the very least. The Watergate and Iran-Contra scandal, and you can follow those who really paid attention. You can follow that network as it evolved into what became the 9/11 conspiracy, called the shadow government. Some people call it the invisible government, the Illuminati, all kinds of names have been given. But basically, it's an intelligence apparatus that works cooperatively with other intelligence agencies. And the intelligence network itself stems from the elite of society. Skull and Bones, for example, created the CIA. So, yeah, it's really important that, you know, with 9/11, the people that we're talking about, and this is what got me involved, they're very... they've been saturated in the tricks of ruling, in the tricks of the trade, if you will. They know how to manipulate people. They come from backgrounds and they're taught techniques and strategies that most of us will never hear before outside of a conspiracy book. But there are some credible books out there. For example, there's a book called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. And it was written by Dr. Carol Quigley, who taught at Georgetown University, taught Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton actually accredited Carol Quigley in his acceptance speech when he took office. And Carol Quigley was a globalist. He was open. He taught the New World Order crowd, if you will, their strategy. But he didn't believe it needed to be secret. He believed we should go ahead and tell the people this. And he taught some of the greatest minds in the history of the world. And he basically, you read his book and he tells you, oh yeah, the Federal Reserve System is a scam. It's an illegitimate monopoly. It's controlled by private hands. The interest doesn't go to a federal agency. It goes into private hands. So therefore, it's an illegal establishment. He talked about how the federal income tax is actually illegitimate, but it was never ratified. And that it was in turn... and still is a fraud played on the American people. And he basically went through all of history up until World War II, and I think the book came out in like 1953, if I'm not mistaken. And it sold about a couple thousand copies, and then of course it was bought up by Macmillan Pitney, printing company, and the first half of the plates were destroyed at the book, and it was copyrighted, and we never released it again for 35 years. And then, of course, the rights to the book were rebought, and then, of course, some of the original prints were found, and they reprinted it. And when you read this book in its entirety, it is amazing. So here's a guy on the inside who had direct access to the Council on Foreign Relations documents. He advised governments for years. He's in administrations. And his original job for the Hoover Institute was to go over to Europe and figure out why World War II happened originally, and World War I, and what the reasons for this were. And the reason for this was because the United States administration, the military at the time, wasn't buying. They weren't believing that the country could go to war over these treaties that they really never had gone to war over. So they sent him over to investigate, and he looked at papers, and he found a conspiracy between Cecil Rhodes and Lord Milner and a bunch of people, actually, people who were advising governments over in Europe, who basically conspired to collapse the economy of Europe, conspired to completely destroy the European, the old monarchy powers, the imperial powers of the world. Nobody believed they could do it, but they actually did. They succeeded at advising people and going to war, collapsing the country, and then these gentlemen who were involved in this conspiracy then came forward to create the League of Nations, and then, of course, subsequently after World War II, created NATO, the United Nations. And he traced this into the Council on Foreign Relations. These same men communicated in what was called the Roundtable Network, which helped create the economic collapse in the United States, with the help of the Rockefeller Foundation, J.P. Morgan's interests, and the Rothschild's interests. And then, of course, through that economic depression came the Federal Reserve, which was actually set up to prevent an economic collapse. But if you actually look at it, Federal Reserve came in 1913, which is the beginning of the depression. So it was created to stop what it inevitably did, was responsible for. So nobody puts two and two together and goes, wait a second, don't we have a Federal Reserve system to stop this from happening? And of course it happened anyway. So it's an amazing book, but basically it tells you that there's a group of people who do not care about you. They don't care about you. They don't care about me. They don't care about anybody. They want more for themselves and less for you. That's what they want. They want power. They seek power. And it's basically a tale of the history of the world. I mean, the history of the world is taking it over. That's the history of the world. You read history. The history is going to war with other nations, conquering civilizations, expanding empires, military expansion, religious expansion. It's all about conquering and taking over. It's all about power and the seek for wealth and domination, authority. That's human nature. That's not a conspiracy. What's been very amazing, though, is in the last 60 years, the United States population has been very dumbed down to be basically convinced that the idea that people seek power, that's a conspiracy. And that's actually a gross misunderstanding, and the fact that that's been achieved is really kind of foul, and it's dangerous because it allows common, simple, human nature, basically, to take over, and people can do whatever they want because nobody's going to believe it simply because they believe somebody can't be that quote-unquote evil. And that's basically what we're fighting today, and that's why I joined We Are Change, because when you look at 9/11, you see basically another chapter in these elitist divide-and-conquer techniques. And that's what this is all about. This isn't about, like I said, this isn't about you or me, this isn't about the people anymore. This is like a bad symptom, and once you let a bad symptom go too long, you leave it untreated, it gets worse and worse, like a cancer. And that's what the American population has gone through. We let Kennedy slide, we let Watergate kind of go, we let Iran-Contra go. We had him at Iran-Contra. We could have severed the head of the snake then. And Oliver North put the rap for he was much lower down the chain. If anyone looked into that, they would know who was really involved in that, and the massive cover-up of the drug smuggling into the United States by the Contras and the Reagan administration, as well as the launching through Nixon and all the way through Reagan of the DEA and the war on drugs. I mean, this is treason. We could have got him then but nobody went after him. Why? Because a lot of witnesses and journalists were killed that were covering the MENA, Arkansas drug smuggling and the Los Angeles drug distribution to Ricky Ross. And that was all uncovered in Iran-Contra. And John Kerry helped lead those investigations. And, of course, he goes against George W. Bush in 2004. Both of them are Skull and Bones. And, of course, Skull and Bones is intelligence agencies. And, of course, who are they? Well, they were founded by Russell Trust. The drug traders, terrorists, pirates, these guys are crooks. They're phony. This is a joke. It's a big show. It's a big game. The tables are turned. The game's rigged. It's all a game. And so we're basically set up with it.
Well, of course, Kerry leads the investigation into what happened in MENA, which was oversaw by Governor Bill Clinton. And then, of course, Barry Seal is shot, and it's discovered that in his wallet is the personal phone number of George Bush. So I think it's all quite evident to anyone who actually researches this what's really going on. But that's an incredible amount of information. But let's focus in a little bit on what's going on currently with We Are Change Colorado in Denver. And I understand there is something of a perfect storm developing around the events in Denver next month at the Denver Democratic National Convention. Can you tell my listeners a little bit about what's going on and what you've managed to uncover so far about possible provocateuring and even a false flag event at the Denver DNC?
Well, there was a group that started called Recreate 68, and it's I think 2 or 3 years old now. And it's a group made up of Glenn Spagnuolo and Barb and Mark Cohen. Barb and Mark Cohen were a part of the original 1968 rioting protest. I was able to meet them, and I met a lot of people in Denver who were very concerned about this group, Recreate 68, because it became apparent that they were planning violent action, direct action against the DNC. And it was very hard to prove that, so what I did was I attended some of the meetings, I just asked them directly what they were planning, and they told me, yeah, violence is in the works. And I got confirmation. And I wrote up an article about that, and I also went out and did a little bit further research and found out that Barb and Mark Cohen actually were a part of the DAN network. DAN was a Denver Action Network. It was a direct action network that went nationally. They were an anti-globalist group. And they were involved in a scandal in Denver, where a bunch of people, protesters from Rocky Mountain Heat, were protesting outside of a Kohl's department store. Barb and Mark Cohen showed up with their DAN network and got on bullhorns and told everyone to run into the store and vandalize the store and destroy things. And then what ended up happening was the police came, of course, they arrested everybody, and then Rocky Mountain Heat, the protest group, was labeled a terrorist group. The police got access to a bunch of files and completely destroyed that group of dissent. And Barbara Mark Cohen lost. And Delilah Wilson, another name, she was involved in that. Famous radical protester who threw bison entrails on politicians in the past as well. They're very radical. They don't get caught for what they're doing. They basically infiltrate other people's groups. That's what I began to see. And when I looked at Recreate 68, I started looking at their demonstrations, which are completely a mess. I mean, they want to, for one demonstration, they want to surround the federal courthouse in Denver and demand the release of prisoners on death row. That's a ridiculous notion. Just the fact that you can't, not only can you not surround the Denver federal courthouse, but you're going to be getting thousands of angry people together. That's a very dangerous scenario. But the one that really sparked me was surrounding the Denver Mint. They call this the Shake the Moneymaker demonstration. They claim it's tongue-in-cheek. They want to surround the Denver Money Mint and attempt to levitate the building. And Glenn Spagnuolo is going to hand out a bunch of bags with money symbols on them. The problem with this is if you go to the Denver Mint, one of like 2 or 3 coin mints in the United States, it's right across the street from the city and county building where the Denver courthouses are. It's also catty-corner to the Denver Police Station, where Denver Police Headquarters is set up, the deal of writing. And that Denver Mint has a fence around it, which clearly identifies, and we actually talked to a security guard, that you cannot surround that fence. Not only can you not surround it, you can't touch it, you can't vandalize it, you can't shake it or anything. And actually, if they think that you're going to mess with that fence, they can shoot you, shoot the kill. So Glenn Fagnuolo, I saw, was creating demonstrations that are going to put protesters not only at arm's length from cops, but in aggravated situations that are going to get people upset, and I don't know what fantasy world he might be living, assuming he's not a provocateur working with somebody, or is it just be a not an intelligent person. The point is, you know, these kinds of scenarios, you can't control that. You're not going to be able to control 10,000 protesters. What, are you going to get on a bullhorn and give everyone orders? No, it's very disorderly. They have four people in their courtroom. They have no major planning going on. They have very, very little money and very, very little efforts, but they're acting as an umbrella group that's going to throw a bunch of small activist groups under their umbrella, so whatever they do, we get blamed for. And I saw basically a repeat of what they've already done in the past and began to see that, okay, these guys are provocateurs. It was around this time that I became familiar with another group called Unconventional Action. And I just wrote a story about them, Unconventional Action. The article's up on truthalliance.net. Unconventional Action is a group that is planning militant direct action. They call themselves anarchists and anti-authoritarian. They're attending a group called Alliance for Real Democracy. And just so you know, Alliance for Real Democracy got together because of my retreat 68 whistleblowing. When I blew the whistle on that group being violent, Denver went through a period where everyone had to disassociate themselves from retreat 68 because they weren't getting grants, they weren't getting the finances they need, they weren't being taken seriously. So they created a new group, Alliance for Real Democracy, which was supposed to pledge peaceful protesting. And of course, at their meeting in their core, there was a group, Unconventional Action, which on their site publicly admits direct militant action. So again, we have a repeat. So it seems like they're planning violence, and that's just my interpretation of things. Most people basically come to that same conclusion. The evidence is overwhelming. And to top all this off, Denver's actually been preparing to handle martial law in the city. There have been pandemic drills, biowarfare drills, but the most important ones will be urban warfare drills. SOCOM, Special Operations Command, is in Denver training. They are basically doing black helicopter training with live ammunition. Now, they're using simmunitions, which are paint rounds, basically really expensive paint rounds, but you can't tell because they'll go into real weapons. So they're flying around Denver in unmarked helicopters with men hanging off the sides of helicopters with loaded guns, landing on top of buildings, prepping them, clearing them, building detention facilities, building decontamination sites, preparing for the DNC. And when you put two and two together, it appears that SOCOM is planning, and who knows what other private or, you know, military groups are planning this with them. But they're planning to deal with mass evacuations of the city we uncovered. They're planning to deal with a biological attack. This could be just for preparation, or this could be because they really are, who knows, there could be a false flag, there could be, we don't really know yet. And with the amount of provocateuring I've seen, it seems like a recipe for disaster. It seems like everyone's ramping up and getting ready for a big finale, a big show. And it looks like it's not going to be good.
Tell us about the evacuation plans that you uncovered.
The evacuation plans include 20,000 people to go to decontamination sites. Now, that's all the contamination sites can handle. They're using the Denver Coliseum, Coors Field, and Industrial Field as decontamination facilities. A We Are Change Colorado member actually overheard a conversation at a restaurant in which he worked. He's a waiter. He's asked for his identity to remain anonymous. I have his information in a signed statement of everything he heard. So if anyone ever really, really wants to go pursue me on what I've said, that's a ball of fire. They don't want to enter because I've got witnesses. But for the sake of privacy, I'm going to keep his name quiet. But he overheard the conversation of Denver Office of Emergency Management workers planning for the DNC. And they're going to turn these facilities into decontamination sites, and they said they're not going to be able to save most people. The decontamination sites are basically there just to give the appearance that they're trying to do something, and that probably 20,000 people would die from the biological attack. And the waiter, the Rear Change member, he wasn't sure if they were talking about a drill or an exercise or if they knew of a specific threat, it was very difficult to determine what it was they were talking about. But he knew for sure it was decontamination sites. He knew for sure this was BNC. And we were able to go out and confirm, yeah, they're building these detention facilities, they're building decon sites, they're prepping for martial law. Basically you put two and two together, potential for an event in Denver, is very high. What that event is, I don't know. It could be something as minor as massive protests and violence, resulting in martial law. Or the extreme end is something happens like a biological attack or some kind of CBRN, which is basically a chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, you know, a dirty bomb. Something like that happens, which Denver is right now preparing to deal with on the most extensive levels. That would not only ensure martial law, but if it was, let's say, blamed on Iran, and we may or may not be able to prove if it is Iran or not, that would give the pretext for war with Iran. They have to put it in perspective that this administration, just like many other administrations, does actually commit these kinds of atrocities. They transpire all the time throughout our history. And if that's what we have here, then it could be a government op. It could be a real terrorist attack. We don't know. It's very hard to tell the difference between those two because the United States government finances guerrilla terrorists, it has been for years. And sometimes there are other networks that are disassociated with the intelligence community that are real terrorist networks. It's like another Cold War we're in. And they want to pursue this. They want to keep it fueled. Right now, the fire is dying out. Right now, in their minds, they think they need to rekindle the fire. We just saw Bill Kristol come out. He's a founding PNAC member. He said that they're prepping to go to war with Iran by the election. We saw Ray McGovern come out with the same thing. Ray McGovern came out 2 years ago and said that they were going to false flag us. So did Brittany Brzezinski. Said they were going to false flag us, blame it on Iran to get us to go to war with Iran. So could the DNC be one of those scenarios? I don't know. But we have to be ready for anything. And it's an interesting and scary time to be in Denver, I'll tell you that.
I can certainly imagine. And it is important to note that in 2005, the American Conservative magazine had a report that released the plans that Cheney had tasked Stratcom with drafting up that would basically bomb Iran in the event of a terrorist event in the United States, regardless of who is to blame. So there's no doubt that if any type of terrorist event happens at the Denver DNC, the Iran war would be on the table immediately. But it could play out in a number of ways, and of course one of the ways is provocateuring something with the street actions that are going on and then blaming it on rowdy protesters as a way of perhaps implementing a martial law. And it's obvious, I think, to many that the logic of feds provocateuring street actions makes sense because it's so easy to do and then to pin the blame on the peaceful protesters. What do you think is an effective method for countering that strategy?
Well, doing what we're doing right now, it's important to document that this is something that we can see in the planning. Everyone out there, you know, in the Twin Cities or in Denver or wherever, whenever they see preps for any of this kind of action, it's really important to document it. To get video, to get audio, to get every kind of record, written record, any kind of record you can, document the heck out of it. So you have massive massive amounts of information that you can come out later and show, look, not only did I warn against this, I advised against this, I tried to voice my concerns to stop this from happening, I'm disassociated with this, so you cannot pin me in or related to this nonsense, and that protects you. That's the least you can do. The most you can do is try to pursue them legally. If you have evidence that somebody's going to get violent, get it to a cop. Get it to the FBI, get it to, and I hate to say this, but at least it'll be on their record in some file somewhere, which you have to request once you tell them, so you can have a request that I've been here and that I was here talking about this. If you have to, bring a recorder and record the whole conversation and document that you are not that group, you notified the FBI, and then if it continues to happen, you can come out and say, these guys intentionally did not act. And that's something that's very important because that's the only protection that'll save us. from being linked in with these groups. The only kind of protection we have is to disassociate ourselves and document this as much as possible and continue to warn people about it so that people are ready to handle it when it comes down. If we have another Timothy McVeigh kind of situation where it's going to be provocateurs that are going to maybe release a dirty bomb or just get violent at the DNC, if that does happen, that will create a bunch of domestic terrorism bills we never want to see. I mean, there's already plenty of destruction of the Constitution. Basically, it doesn't exist anymore. Our civil liberties are gone. But something like that could be the precursor to maybe not just war with Iran, but massive martial law throughout the entire United States. I mean, you know, they can strip us of all kinds of privileges that we basically have now. They've already stripped us of our rights, but they can now start maybe, you know, after something like that, they can say, well, we conducted terrorism, and now we have to enforce a curfew and all this nonsense and checkpoints and, you know, microchips, vaccinations, I don't know. The point of the fact is, that's something everyone needs to be familiar with. They need to be talking about it. They need to be documenting it now as much as possible so that if it happens, which we hope it does, we come out and we launch a full legal attack on the perpetrators who we've been documenting, and we hold the government accountable. And you can certainly do that, especially if you tried to warn them beforehand. So that's what we can do. You document it, and you notify FBI, and you notify the police, and you document that you did that, and so we can prove this as much as possible on the build-up to whatever event you see is going to go south. That's going to save you. That has the potential to save you.
Now, Jonathan Olenoff, turning back to the urban warfare drills, can you tell us about some of the stunning footage that you guys were able to take of the urban warfare drills and tell people about what was going on in Denver recently?
The urban warfare drills are basically, it looked like evacuation techniques, transportation. They were basically men in black helicopters. Unmarked helicopters, Blackhawks, MHs, all kinds of helicopters. We saw tons of them. Basically, was flying around Denver. They would land on rooftops or on the street level. They would pick up or evacuate their cargo and move on. And the men were in all black. Some of them were in military garb. Some of them were in police uniforms. Had fully automatic weapons with live ammunition in them. They were paint rounds again, ammunition rounds, at least that's what we were told, that's what we found. But then again, you can't tell the difference between the paint round and the real round. Why? Because it all works in a real weapon, fully automatic weapon. So they're running around the cities, shooting and prepping for who knows what. And everyone was freaked out. There was no warning. In fact, for the first 2 days, there was no confirmation that these helicopters even existed. In fact, there was denial. Hickenlooper and Cleveland Police Department said there was no helicopters. What are you talking about? The news contacted them and they received that response. But on Tuesday, which was the third day into the drills, there was a massive public relations release, basically, by the police department to tell people, oh, yeah, there are helicopters. They're sure they're just training for becoming geographically familiar with the city and it's nothing to be aware of. And then they said it's nothing to do with the DNC, even though we all know it's directly connected to the DNC. But of course, the military won't ever cop to that because they don't cop to anything. The city, you know, spent $50 million on security, upgrades and is bringing in all kinds of equipment to deal with the DNC. They're training for all kinds of things here in Denver. And the weird thing is when the helicopters were flying by, they would throw these glow sticks out with little U.S. Army or American flag patches zip tied around it. And they would just throw them out and they would land on the street or, you know, land on the people. And, we'd look at them and it was like an exercise to throw who knows what at. Maybe tear gas, maybe a frag grenade, we don't know. It could be propaganda, support your local military, whatever nonsense. The important thing is all this violates Posse Comitatus. You're not allowed to exercise in the jurisdiction of the city without the permission of the city. They never had permission of the city. The reason why I can prove that is because the first 2 days the city denied they were even there. So unless the city wants to eat their words and be subpoenaed, they lied to us, or they did give permission. But either way, they don't have permission because the people didn't give it. The posse commentators were supposed to protect us from these kinds of drills, these kinds of exercises. The military's not even supposed to be used for these kinds of scenarios. But we did get confirmation from the Denver police chief that it was so calm and that this was military. So, you know, we got as much footage as we could get. We followed the helicopters around and basically documented these drills. And hopefully, I mean, I don't even know. There's no need for it. There's no need for that kind of drill. I mean, look, they have buildings on their bases. Becoming geographically familiar with Denver is not going to help them over in Iraq. The layout's different. The streets are different. The buildings are different. The atmosphere, the language, everything's completely different. They're going to get no experience from prepping in an urban environment like here, unless they're planning to go to an urban environment like here. I'm very concerned with what those drills meant and what the hell they were exploring.
Obviously some deeply troubling drills going on right now. Let's turn for a moment to truthalliance.net. Can you tell my listeners about that website and what they might be expected to find on it?
Truthalliance.net is basically a community. It's made up of some friends of mine who started the website. And it's a place where activists and people interested in doing something go to sign up. You can get on newsletters, and there's just tons of projects. We need help. We need finances. We need money to expand. We have probably 200 or 300 projects on our table right now. We were only able to get out about 10 to 15 at a time. And every single one of our projects is either movies, we have a studio, we have a workshop, we have a database, we have internet article writing, you name it. It's basically an activist community online so that people can discuss in real time with other people around the world and coordinate actions, activist actions, and distribute information and get access to information and go on the forums and discuss this information, breaking information. And that's the goal of Truthalliance, is to begin this community. We have about 180-something members now. It's growing every day. We need as many as possible. And basically, it's an open-ended network. There's no centralized objective. There's nobody trying to control it. Basically, the people's network where people can go and do what they want. There are administrators who are monitoring if there's agents on there and stuff like that, but I don't think, I know my friend who's doing it, and he actually doesn't really do much unless somebody tells him, hey, this guy's harassing me or whatever. We haven't actually had that kind of experience. But for the most part, Truth Alliance is, I mean, from what I've experienced so far, is the best thing in my life. We're integrating We Are Change into it. We're going to attempt to do that. We'd like to integrate some of the InfoWars people into that. I know a lot of people have been discussing our films, trying to get more people on board in this network. I think Truthalliance was originally supposed to be a gift to that community for what a lot of people were looking for. They're thinking, what's the next step? Now, if you're a person in the city and you don't know anybody at all who is on the same page as you, you can go on MySpace, you might be able to find somebody, but MySpace is still open-ended. So we wanted to create an online community where activists could meet other activists and actually coordinate agendas together. That's what Truthalliance is, aside from being a media outlet that's going to be reporting everything we find during our activist ventures.
Jonathan, what are you working on at the moment, and what can people expect from you in the future?
I have a film coming out here this fall. It's called Core Corruption. I've been working on it for over 2 years. Basically, an accumulation of my research. Hopefully we'll present to people that 9/11 is basically a symptom and a bigger problem, that there's a group of elitists who do these kinds of things, that continue to do these kinds of things unchecked for a very long time. And if we don't hold them accountable, they will take us completely out. They've already destroyed the Constitution. They're going to destroy probably the planet because they're lunatic. And if you actually look into these guys deeply, some people actually find they are actually sociopaths by definition. I mean, you can look directly at their behavior, their actions, their networks. They come from ritualistic backgrounds and religions that are crazy. In turn, when I say crazy, I'm referring to belief systems that doing harm is a necessity. in other words, the divide and conquer Hegelian principles. They're sociopaths, they're lunatics, they do not believe in the same Judeo-Christian belief systems that most of America believes in, they don't believe in the Muslim values, they don't care about the Buddhists in the world, who I have a very deep respect for. I think these people are the cancer on the earth. But personally, I'd like to see them with, personally, I'd like to see them just step down from their throne and hold them accountable finally. Maybe we can do that. We get big enough when we get enough momentum and we start getting involved in local politics and get into office, we can do that. And that's what this film is about. It's called For Corruption. And it's going to be a series. The first one focuses on 9/11, but it's a series that exposes this information and hopefully gives people the incentive to get involved and how we are going to be able to decapitate the head of the beast. This is how we're going to do it. And, of course, I have a book coming out, Core of Corruption. That's going to be coming out very soon. That will be available on Amazon.com. You can check TruthAlliance.net. I'm sure We Are Change Colorado will put it up there, too. And the book will be made available. The book and the film will help finance our efforts here and work on the next projects. And, of course, we hand out 800 to 1,000 DVDs a week. So we have many costs. But we always ask for donations if we can get it. But hopefully this book and this movie will give people a product in exchange for helping us out by financing us.
All right, excellent. Jonathan, just before we end things here today, I wanted to go back to something that you said at the beginning of the interview. You talked about the JFK assassination as obviously being a starting point for research into these types of areas. And I understand, I've heard Jason Burmes on the Alex Jones Show mention, I believe it was yourself, has the New Zealand Star Herald from November 22nd,
63? I have actually the Dallas, I have the Denver Post, I have a bunch of papers from that day.
Ah, I see, okay. Could you tell people about those papers and maybe their significance?
Well, there was a lot of reporting coming out in the press around the world, basically similar to Building 7. Building 7 and 9/11 was reported that it had collapsed many hours before it actually did, at least 30 minutes on CNN and BBC. And on Kennedy, it's kind of the same thing. You get reports of other people's, not just J.D. Clifford and President Kennedy's death before the actual event happened, but almost like it's real time, and it just didn't make any sense. Some papers were reporting the suspects, all the information on this case, well before anything happened. And the same with, there was one other death that was discussed, not just J.D. Tippett, but I was able to define an article I was talking about another death. I can pull it out, I can find it. Let's see if I can find it. Two others killed in Texas, a Secret Service agent and a Dallas policeman. So J.D. Tippett and some Secret Service men were shot and killed on the day that Kennedy was assassinated. No other information was given available. And there's no information that I've been able to find that any Secret Service agent was killed. I'd like to know what they're talking about, where this information came from. Kennedy's kind of an interesting story anyway, you know, with the whole network there. It's the same 9/11 network. People who look into it know that George H.W. Bush was in that network. And all the conspirators are basically anti-Castro Cubans, the Mafia, and the CIA, and people try to pick between them, but if you actually look at that time, people really pay attention to what was going on during the Kennedy assassination era. Those three groups were already working together in a war with Cuba, a covert action. The Mafia was being hired by the CIA to try to kill Castro. They were working with the CIA closely for a very long time. The anti-Castro Cubans were training on CIA camps in Louisiana, where Lee Harvey Oswald and David Ferry were pictured. They were in Florida. They were on the Zapata offshore rigging, oil rigging, which is what HW owned. This whole anti-Castro Cuban war, which was going on during the Cold War, was a CIA network which included Cubans and the Mafia. So the fact that you have those three as your suspects goes to show you that probably that network, considering also if you look at that network was trying to pass Operation Northwoods at the time, they were trying to false flag the United States and terrorize citizens to get us to go to war with Cuba, the Bay of Pigs was a huge failure. And so you can look at that over and over. There's a lot of motive that this network is behind it, and you begin to look at the suspects and you actually see, yep, it's the same people that were involved in that network. I mean, Lee Harvey Oswald trained in Operation Mongoose with David Ferry. He was in the CIA network. some have even been able to prove that he might have been a CIA agent. And that's really important to note because David Ferry, of course, trained Barry Seal at the Civil Air Patrol in the 1960s, where Barry Seal worked under Porter Goss and J.M. Wade, with Felix Rodriguez and some other people in this network. Barry Seal trained Rudy Detters from 1983 to 1986 in his drug running operations in Louisiana. And Rudy Detters went on, of course, to head Huffman Aviation, where he owned it, as well as Hilliard, where Muhammad Atta is now. Muhammad Atta was known as a heroin dealer at the time of 9/11. 90% of our heroin comes from Afghanistan. I wonder if Muhammad Atta was a drug runner. Now, he was already wanted for that. His stripper girlfriend was saying he was a heroin dealer. He was seen on the Sun Cruise line as a heroin dealer. Wally Hilliard, the other co-owner of Huffman Aviation, had one of his planes stopped with 43 pounds of heroin on it. Seems like Muhammad Atta is not a Barry Seal. So why don't we know about this network if it traces to the Kennedy assassination? Felix Rodriguez and those other people that worked with Barry Seal were involved in Watergate. All these men were involved in Iran-Contra. And, of course, it traces right into 9/11. Sounds like there's evidence for the quote-unquote shadow government. If I've ever seen any, this has got to be it. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. You look at Barry Seal's private defense attorney, Richard Benveniste. Well, he became one of the 9/11 commissioners. I mean, Benveniste defended Barry Seal. I mean, the whole thing is a joke. But 9/11 is a cover-up of something else. Question is what? Some people argue drugs. The evidence for that? Significant. Significant. Why? Because in Iran-Contra, the network that was involved in covering it up, not just John Kerry and some other people, but Morgenthau and Sherkowski's investigation in Manhattan, you look at that U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of Manhattan, they knew all about the B-52I connections during Iran-Contra. B-52I, of course, went on to become major players in the biggest scandal in the world. Of course, Khalid bin Mahmoud, primary shareholder of B-52I, walked and invested in the Heartland Energy and saved George W. Bush's business career. And, of course, Khalid bin Mahmoud is Osama bin Laden's brother. But that's not suspicious. He owns Delta Oil. The guy, Khalid bin Mahmoud, was doing a deal with Amerida Hess, which was Thomas Keene's company. Thomas Keene was the chairman of the 9/11 Commission. I mean, what's going on here? These guys are together. They make it appear like this is a separate network. It's the same network. They've run drugs. They've built camps. They've trained guerrilla fighters. They've trained terrorism. They've done this all in the intelligence-saturated communities in the underworld for years, for 40 or 50 years. They've operated without any problems. Anybody who's tried to go after them has been killed, including President Kennedy. This is just another chapter in their book. So it's real important to understand there's nothing these guys won't do. There's nothing that these guys won't do. Whether it's false flag at DNC, whether, you know, provocateur, their dissent. I mean, in Iran-Contra, we uncovered Rec 84. They were gonna build FEMA camps around the country and put us all in camps, put all the dissident activists in camps because that administration really believed in that. And now we learn after 2001 they actually built those FEMA camps and they're ready to be housed. There actually are. There's some have argued there might be up to 800 camps around the United States right now ready to house, you know, who? We want to know who. I'd like to know who. That's a lot of people. So I don't put anything past these guys anymore. They're crooks. They come from a elitist secret society that believes in occultic nonsense. They're all members of these ridiculous old ancient mystery religions that date back all the way into all kinds of loony tune belief systems that Aleister Crowley believes in and things like that and Pat Mulvaski. They're nuts. They're crazy. They're sociopaths. But because they have the power, because they have the wealth, because they know the tricks of the trade, they manipulate the people to believe whatever they want to believe. And they get the people to protect them in their illegal, illicit actions. Which people still don't know about. Most people still don't know about MENA. They still don't really know about it. You know, it's legitimate. The CIA was involved in protecting drug shipments in the United States. Prove it. Same with in Los Angeles. Mike Rupert exposed that.
Now, Jonathan Olenoff, that's an incredible amount of information there and dozens of threads for people to pick up for their own research. But just going back to clarify, you mentioned about the two Secret Service agents that were killed on November 22nd. And did that come from a newspaper article?
Yes, the Denver Post, 1962.
I see. Do you have a scan of that available on your website?
No, we can scan it and put it up. But we have tons of stuff we haven't put on the site yet.
If you could put that up, I think that would be extremely interesting to take a look at and potentially get people researching.
Sure.
Excellent. Well, Jonathan Olenoff, thank you very much for your time today. You've provided an incredible amount of information, and you're doing some incredible work with We Are Change. Just as one final question, I'd just like to ask, on a general note about We Are Change, what do you think is the significance of We Are Change as a phenomenon, and where do you think it's going to go from here?
It's expanding. It's going to create a new era in thinking. I think, personally, people are fed up. I meet more people every day that don't believe in this political system because they're convinced politicians aren't doing what they're asking them to do. That's been going around this country for the last since Kennedy was killed and before. So everyone wants change. They want it. They crave it. They don't know what it's going to take. A lot of people are kind of discouraged, and they don't know what kind of focus they need to get themselves to become active. The truth is, these guys have one up on me. They have one up on me. The guys who run the world, they don't like you. They don't care about you. They're not interested in you. They want an uneducated population, like George Carlin said. They just want more for themselves. What they don't want is an educated population that thinks critically for themselves, sitting around figuring out that the system threw them overboard 30 years ago. Because if they figure that out, there's going to be a revolution. In fact, Cheryl Quigley wrote in his book, Tragedy and Hope, A Hope in the World in Our Time, he wrote in his book that if the people knew about the Federal Reserve System, if they knew, there would be a revolution by tomorrow. That's how powerful this information is. That's why it's important that we continue to push it, we continue to share it, so we continue to enlighten and educate the people that the system is used against us right now, and it's working right now to destroy thousands of years of working towards freedom and liberty. And it's achieving that at a rapid rate through the use of false flag terrorism, provocateuring, and the belief that the military and this elite Anglo-Saxon Protestant group can run the world. Now, well, it used to be WASP, now primarily includes many Jews and Muslims and people from China, people from Japan. It seems like it's that elite community has opened its doors to basically anybody who's rich. Seems to share the common interest of conquering their own people, working together to work against them. That's really gross. That's really disgusting. The media needs to report on this, and we need to go out there, and we need to become active. We Are Change is going to do it. It's expanding. I personally think it's going to be the new revolution. I think we're going to see it as a revolution of ideas, a revolution of beliefs. We've got nothing left anyway. It's all being taken away right now. You got no time. There was time. There was that moment in your life, and this is for everyone who hears this. There's that moment in our lives where we're waiting to be a part of something great, to be a part of something grand. It's right now. You sit down and do nothing, you're guilty of treason. You're guilty of being involved in it. That's actually true. If you know there's something like this going on and you fail to do something about it, you're guilty of being a part of it. You accomplish that after the fact. So it's really important that people really kind of build up their momentum and help us out and pick a side. Because they're working against you. They don't care about you, man. You know? I personally don't like it when people come into my house and dominate over me and put me into the ground and shove me in the ground and tell me do I like it. If you guys out there like to, you know, say, oh yeah, I love it, go ahead. So be my guest. I'm not a liar, and to be honest with you, I'm not a, I don't get pushed around easily. I don't like it when people do that. In fact, I insist, because my founding fathers fought for this, and a lot of people fought for this, that doesn't happen, that we fight that. So that's why this movement is so important.
Jonathan Olenoff, fire out the websites one more time for people who are interested in getting involved.
They can go to wearechange.org, that's the hub website. You can check to see if there's a chapter in your state or in your area or in your city. We have, I think, 40-some-odd chapters around the world. My chapter is We Are Change Colorado. And if they can't find a chapter, they can always contact us. If they contact our site, We Are Change Colorado, we can get you connected with a website, the DVDs you need to distribute. We can tell you how to do that, how to obtain financing, how to set up your own chapter. So if there isn't a chapter to get involved with, contact our site, we can help you do that. And the same with truthalliance.net. If you plug into the truthalliance.net community, you will be instantly basically saturated in this information. You'll know everything. You'll know all the forums. You can be directed towards basically enlightenment. hopefully people can go out there and do that.
All right. Again, some excellent information today. Jonathan Olenoff, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today on the Corbett Report.
No problem.